For the first time, I can say all season, the evil is defeated. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 588 of Motorsport 101. We're reporting to you live from IndyCar streets of Detroit, and we can proudly say Alex Palou didn't win an IndyCar race. What?
Okay, so
what's being proud crap?
So you finished second, right?
No. In fact, the finishing average is still 1.17 because he didn't finish.
Okay. This is going to take a little bit of time to get used to, Dre.
Let's just say when I was watching this race live on our Discord server, the line "and the spear by Reigns" was uttered loudly throughout. We'll talk about how and why we got to that point later on, but we are talking about IndyCar's Grand Prix of Detroit live from the GM building, live from GM HQ, where of course the race was won by Carl Kirkwood. Whoops.
Honda are still perfect on the year, yet yes. Also want to leave.
Yes. Like, if Honda, our shit's never been better, we might quit.
Honda, our shit's so good. It's too expensive. Also, can you please keep the hybrids on this car?
Let the record show, and RJ pointed this out because he was actually in Detroit, and we'll talk to him more about that in a minute. The last time an North American open wheel season had exactly two winners through seven rounds was 2006, where Sebastian Bourdais, well, let's call him Seabass and Dinger, because AJ Allmendinger was the other man. Those two combined for all seven of the field's wins so far that season.
If you're a younger listener who did not know until just now that Colic Racing's AJ Allmendinger, who wants to come back for another season of NASCAR Cup Racing, used to race in the Champ Car World Series and was a legitimate title contender, if you're learning this for the first time, well, I don't blame you.
Understandable. Have a nice day. RJ, how was Detroit, my man?
Oh, my goodness. I'm RJ O'Connell. You know, my thoughts of Detroit were, it is a very fun city.
Sure.
Spending time at General Motors Renaissance Center, which is the big hub of the event, it's neat getting to see, like, GM world and, like, how big the building is. It's also terrifying just to see how empty this building is because General Motors has made it no secret that, like, they want out of it. They want to, like, either get a bunch of local taxpayer money to renovate it into mixed-use property, or they want to tear it down themselves in a proposal described by the Detroit Free Press as, quote, likely the largest voluntary skyscraper demolition in world history. Huh. I'm looking this building and I just think, I know it's a little old because it's like, it's almost a 50-year-old complex at this point. I'm just like, you want to tear this down? Really?
It's a wild one. The funny thing I always hear about Detroit and obviously the controversial move to go from Belle Isle to here on this new street circuit around GM world, essentially, is the funny thing I always get is that the people that know Detroit, and I want to give a shout out to a longtime listener and friend of the show, Susan, on our Discord server. She's a fantastic woman. Love her to pieces. Big fan of the show. The people that know Detroit will defend Detroit with their life.
Oh, yeah.
It's extremely Detroit Lions, Dan Campbell, I'm going to take two charged lemonades and run through this brick wall kind of defending. It's
Detroit Tigers, those gritty tigs. We only have a fraction of a percent of a chance to make the playoffs, and we do it anyway, despite the fact that our best player is like a paperweight, and we just traded our best pitcher to the Dodgers. You're welcome for Jack Flaherty. It's very... Look, I get it. Like, having gone there for the first time, I actually had like a very interesting chat with the cab driver that took me back to the airport. It's just like 10 years ago, like there's a lot of places in Detroit where it doesn't matter where you're from, you really don't want to walk around there, like, after sunset. They've cleaned up the place a lot, let's just say. Yeah. It's very charming. I will say my experience having worked the event, I'm sorry for dawdling, it's just like, it's very neat being at GM Global Headquarters, but I think the big thing is it's like, it's too easy for me to just get stuck into that conference center that they were renting out as a building for us to use as the media center. And it also made it just kind of hard to just like go out there and walk the paddock and like talk to people, which I didn't get to do. It's the shared IMSA and IndyCar paddock. So All the IMSA WeatherTech people are there. All the IndyCar people are there. Sometimes there's some overlap. We have teams in multiple championships, like Penske, like RLL, you know.
Yeah.
Like Meyer Shank Racing.
I'll have you know that when I did the intro earlier, I wasn't referring to Alex Palou. I was referring to Porsche and IMSA.
Well, you see, the fun thing with that is that they really weren't, because they still finished third and fourth with a moon on top of the car.
Oh, woe is you. You're streaking.
Oh, my championship lead is shrunk by such a slight amount. Oh, heavens.
Yeah, if I had the book in the intro, it would have been Kyle Kirkwood hits a huge three to cut the lead to 78. Except a lot of people didn't know that didn't include the penalty he was given after the Indianapolis 500.
Fox can't do math, amongst other things, in their broadcast.
Neither could the internal displays on the timing tower inside of here, because, like, I've got it here. They've got Kirkwood at minus 78.
That is both not true.
Both of these Detroit races, IMSA and IndyCar, were people hitting huge leads to cut the huge threes to cut the lead to 42.
But you know what? It did prove that we can actually have shit in Detroit, because it was, at least on the IMSA side of things, not a laughable shit show.
No, not really. And to be fair, IndyCar largely behaved themselves. It was nowhere near. Unless your name is
Scott McLaughlin.
Well, McLaughlin's just a terrorist at this point, but more about him later. But yeah, like, generally speaking, the field was much better behaved this year, and I think we got the best non-500 race we've had in IndyCar this year. Genuinely enjoyed this one. This was a good race, and Detroit, look, it brings a little bit of spice, it brings a little bit of chaos, and we had some good overtaking, some good racing, and I think we had a generally enjoyable Grand Prix. And I think we'll spend the next half an hour or so talking about that. Yeah. But first, places you can find us. We're swapping out Facebook for TikTok and the usual places you can find this intro now. You're welcome. We're on YouTube.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. You can also follow us personally on Blue Sky, Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell, and C Buckley 917 at bsky.social. We've got our website, motorsport101.com, for written vlogs on everything across the weekend, and that includes obviously Formula One in Spain. Ask Dre, which will also be out by the time this goes up for the month. Some fun questions there, as always. And of course, this Detroit Grand Prix that we have just had. We're on Instagram, Motorsport101Pod, and you can now follow us on TikTok, M101_podcast. You can watch highlights of the show and some bonus video blogs from yours truly on there as well. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our episodes. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Ghost Raptor, Jason, and Emma are doing right now. Edwin, I think, is in there as well. Thank you very much for listening in. And remember, you can also back us for a full year now at 30% off if you're that way inclined. It's basically, I think the maths works out at 12 months for the price of 9. So if you really like us and you want to pay in bulk for a whole year instead, you can, if you're that way inclined. So thank you for anyone who wants to take on that option. And thank you, of course, for everyone that chooses to back us on Patreon. We've never had more backers and more followings than we've ever had until now. So thank you sincerely so much for all of your continued support. Right, let's talk about the race that Alex Palou did win. Welcome to the Grand Prix of Detroit.
Well, we just talked about Long Beach. Oh, wait, the other one. All right. Right. So, yeah, as I mentioned, it was relatively calm on the streets of Detroit. Not a shit show. IndyCar enjoyed its post-Indy 500 hangover. Pole sitter Colton Herta led early on, but Scott McLaughlin shuffled into the lead before both Meyer Shank cars spun the outside wall, brought out a caution. McLaughlin then punts off Nolan Siegel on the restart, gets himself a drive-through penalty that is wholly deserved. In middle running, Kyle Kirkwood got to the front of the main strategic pack after tearing through some of the field on the start, getting himself up in a second. All the big flashpoint, Alex Palou, who was not really in the fight for a win, but was still looked like he was going to get a top five, accidentally gets dumped into the wall by AJ Foyt Racing's David Malukas. A huge late crash between Louis Foster and Felix Rosenquist led to an 11-lap sprint to the flag, with Kyle Kirkwood driving away from, I can't believe I'm going to say this, Santino Ferrucci, who got a very well-timed pit stop just before a safety car intervention, shuffled back on sequence. Kirkwood won his second race of the season, with the Rahmat head in second with his first career podium, and Will Power in third on a weekend that started in FP1 with Will Power acting like a Philadelphia Eagles fullback, treating Kyle Kirkwood like he's Jalen Hurts.
Ride him, cowboy. Yeah.
I don't even know how to respond to any of that.
Get that one out of your head.
It's funny. It's just like, obviously, it's very silly. It's a very silly thing for Will to do in that instance. Kyle Kirkwood named him Will Plower after the race. And then we get to Saturday morning at FP2, and the two of them are just yucking it up like crazy about it.
Yeah, this was ruled a no further action, which... Bullshit. How? How that is that possible?
That is such bullshit. You drove into the back of another car intentionally.
You were trying to push Kyle Kirkwood over the goal line for sits to build the lead over the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Where's his 10-second time penalty?
Wasn't even parked for second practice for 10 minutes. No further action for shoving a man against his will for 500 yards.
Everyone just yucking it up after the fact. I'm like, does no one see the problem with doing this?
No. IndyCar is so unserious. Jesus Christ. Well, first of all, Kyle Kirkwood. We always knew this boy was good. And at this point, is it just fair to just call him the best street racer in IndyCar now? Because he just keeps winning these. He does it so well. He's so good on street circuits. And all of his race wins in IndyCar have been on street tracks now. Two at Long Beach and you know, one at the old Nashville circuit we used to race at when it was a street track, and now here. All four of his wins in IndyCar have been on street circuits.
It's like Kyle Kirkwood. You know all the memes that are just like, you know, athlete when X extraordinary condition, it's that one hype reel of LeBron James just dunking on people for 2 minutes. Like, that's Kyle Kirkwood anytime we go to a temporary street circuit, man. And he did this against
Akron, Ohio.
Against Colton Herta, who didn't really have one of those races that was just like, oh boy, can't wait to dominate with my boy catchphrase and all that. Kirkwood was just, the strategy was a little bit better. His pace was a little bit better in the race.
His ability to get through the traffic was a lot better. And that all this, didn't even mention it, with a broken, the whole left-hand side of his front wing was broken.
Yeah.
Down the stretch of this race. He took Santino Ferrucci to Gapplebee's with a broken front wing.
Yeah, with a broken front wing that he got from trying to get around Kiffin Simpson for an immensely high position for Kiffin Simpson, has to be said, which is starting to become...
Kiffin Simpson, top five this week.
Fifth place on merit. Fair play to the boy. That's a hell of a drive.
Top Ganassi driver Kiffin Simpson, just like we all thought this was going to be when he retained the seat in the 8 car. Kirkwood was just like on it all day. Like, he ate David Malukas' lunch on the initial start.
Oh, yeah.
And he ate all his candy.
Yeah, Kirkwood was just phenomenal. He The thing with Kirkwood is that he just had the pace when it mattered most. Every time Kirkwood needed to find a little bit more, he found it. And he had the pace in the critical moments of the race to get himself in the advantageous position. And when it mattered, he found a way to get by. He got a brilliant start. Yeah. His pace was awesome. He was the front of the queue of the people that were on his strategy. And then when he lost out on that final caution and had to pass three dudes off sequence, including Santino Ferrucci, Kiffin yeah. Simpson, and Marcus Armstrong, to yeah. get to the front of the queue, he scythed through them. It was a knife through butter. No, like Kirkwood never looked like he was going to lose that race the moment he got to the front. And look, say what you will about Andretti, their street circuit pace has been exceptional for the last couple of years now. They don't screw this up anymore. Colton Herter. It's the one thing they've always been good at in recent, despite their struggles, they've always still been very strong on street tracks, and this was no exception. It just works for them here.
I mean, this year, that Andretti's had pretty good pace pretty much all the time other than 500 qualifying. It's just that usually the pit stops go awry on some level of, boy, fuck you. Or you catch have freaks. Two illegal cars in the Indy 500. That's neither here nor there. Kyle the Wood Kirkwood. Remember when he supposedly wasn't good enough to warrant an Andretti drive out of the gate? And now he's debatably their top driver.
Well, he has been this year. The thing is, the decision for Andretti to drop him to Foyt for a year is looking more and more stupid by the week. He started off
pretty fucking stupid.
Yeah, and he was always good enough to be in the 27 from day one, and he's getting better and better and better year on year. And last year he was seventh in the standings. He didn't win a race, but he had a couple of really strong podiums and just a very high floor. He was always in the top 10 week in, week out, but he was not finding the real ceiling punching results that would get you into title contention. And again, I have to premise the Alex Palou clause. He's just been so goddamn good that none of this really matters now at this point.
Yeah.
But in terms of best of the rest, the only person in the championship has been better than Kyle Kirkwood this year has been Pato O'Ward, and Pato's only ahead of him on account of the fact that Kirkwood's car was illegal in the 500, yeah. and that's not Kyle's fault.
Yeah, if not for the penalty, he would have just hit a huge lead to cut the lead to 78. As it stands now, Kyle Kirkwood just hit a huge three to cut Pato O'Ward's lead to 90.
Pato O'Ward.
It cut Alex Palou's lead to Pato O'Ward to 90 points, I should say.
Yeah. Alex Palou had to lose one of these eventually.
Yeah, and you didn't expect it to be this way.
Well, I have to say, after the funeral of Rinus VK last time out for the 500, I have a new target. Little Dave is going in a little grave.
This is why he couldn't post on the M101 court for the rest of the day. That exact phrase right there. Because, let you know, secrecy. Every time somebody says something out of pocket when we gather together for social, you know, like playing video games, you know, watching shit on YouTube, you know, watching a race, we have a quotes channel. And we had an informal rule that if you get quoted three times in a rule, bro, you are to sit out the rest of the day and think about the wild shit that you've said. And Cam Buckley was on one because he realized that the winning streak, the podium streak was likely over. And then David Malukas,
I had to go on a streak of my own, man.
He just locked it up. Going up into turn one and
ran him over
into the tires. And David Malukas even admitted he effed up.
Yeah, to be fair to little Dave, he completely owned it. He apologized to Alex straight away and said, look, I effed up. I locked my brakes going into turn one. Honest mistake. And unfortunately, Palou was the victim. And Alex Palou being Alex Palou just said, frustrating DNF, but these things happen. We're on to Gateway.
This man down.
Are you sure? Are you sure he wouldn't have a different opinion or post if he wasn't still almost two races ahead of this field?
I don't know, Cam. Ask, how was he feeling after he blew that motor in Milwaukee?
Well, the battery let go. If he blew a motor, then I would have truly crashed out in those stands. And also sent Christopher DeHardy to the next life as he jinxed him before the race. That said, the willpower choke gene came in so strong last year, he must have known it was coming.
Yeah, it's wild how this turned out. And like I said, like, I think, to be fair, I think being mad at David Malukas is a bit like punching someone's sainted puppy. It's impossible.
Let me put on my brass knuckles.
You would.
I get the reason why people are mad at Will Power, because for like 15 years, he's always comes across as a malcontent rageaholic. And for a while, he was always the guy who blew it, who could never win the big one until he won the championship twice and won an Indy 500.
Yeah, it's the same ball game, but you can't wind Alex Polo up. He's just such a straight-faced, just chill guy. He's the definition of the meme of the dog with its hands in its pockets. He's just a chill guy. You can't wind him up. He's just too chill. Yeah. He's had unspeakable bad luck and had, on rare occasions, mistakes, but he's just unflappable. He's just a chill dude.
That mistake ruined what was going to be a great weekend. Where I said in qualifying, I reminded people, David likes right turns too, because we always think, like, David Malukas is so strong in ovals, but when's he going to put it together in road and street courses? Like, he was putting in some solid performances back when he was at Coin on road and street tracks. In the locker.
He needs to start cashing out on these soon, though. I'm getting frustrated waiting for this to happen, because you look at Malukas' season, outside of the second in the 500, 13th, 18th, 17th, 16th, 23rd, 14th.
Yeah.
He's 11th in points, and he's lucky to be 11th.
Yep. Five behind Marcus Armstrong, 12 on the same number of points. We don't have to talk about who he's tied in points with. Two ahead of Alexander Rossi.
Joseph Newgarden.
And
who had his second best finish of the year this weekend.
In ninth, after coming back from breaking the toe link in qualifying, starting at the back, and...
Oh, so get your mans. I'm not going to tell you again.
How far are we going to stretch the only being good at the 500 clause?
Joseph Newgarden is 185 points off the championship lead.
This is the worst start.
The championship leader didn't score anything this weekend for a finish.
Penske has not started a season this bad as an entire enterprise in a hot minute.
Will Power's not been too bad this year, and in his defense, you could argue St. Pete was a racing incident. He was I still think he's somewhat the majority blame holder in that one, but you probably call that a racing incident and let bygones be bygones. He's been in the top six every other round but one, and that was the piss poor 500 that the Penske had. He's been good. He's still fifth in the standings. It's just, again, one man's won 5 of 7. So
won the other two.
Like, Power would probably still be in contention if it wasn't for Polo's superstar. We're a recurring theme here over the course of this week.
Yeah. So Christian Lundgaard, for that matter, in another top six qualifying effort, another top eight finish.
Lundgaard's been great. Look, I find it amazing that Tony Kanaan is such a petty team principal, and it's not, like, honestly, look, the thing about this, right, as we talked about this a minute ago, like, Scott McLaughlin got a drive-through penalty for spinning out Nolan Siegel on a restart.
And a steer by Reigns.
Yeah.
Ran him over.
And he blamed Nolan Siegel for not breaking hard enough on Twitter afterwards. Tony Kanaan then decides to shitpost him by saying, essentially, I would come up to your talk and talk to your team principal about this, but oh, wait, I can't. Yeah, then Scott McLaughlin goes, you know, oh, you could just call me, you know, you have my number, which is a very quiet way of saying, let's not beef this in public. If nothing else, I do find it impressive that Tony Kanaan found a way to shitpost about another driver while the race is still going.
Well, he's got free time given McLaren. McLaren have been very weird this year in that they've been better than it feels like they are from a distance, especially Lundgaard. But Pato has been nowhere in qualifying. Everywhere but the 500.
Pato has not qualified well, but he has raced extremely well this season. And
we can joke about him being an Indy 500 choker all we want. He's still second in the points. He has three podiums this season. Only Christian Lundgaard, not even Kyle Kirkwood, has that many podiums on the season.
What I'll say is this. This is exactly what McLaren should have been aiming for. They've now got depth. They've got another guy who can rack up the points. This is objectively McLaren's best season since they got to IndyCar. They were close in the 500 again. Okay, didn't win it, but man on the podium again. You take that. Two cars in the top 10, and they've got second in points and fourth on points. This is exactly what McLaren should have been hoping for. They've got it. They've got a capable second driver for the first time since they've got to IndyCar. And yet it feels disappointing because, they've not won a race yet this year. And two, once again, Alex Palou.
Dead as Zach Brown's sworn enemy.
Yeah,
at the same time,
ultimate fight.
Pato's been racing well, but he's been giving himself so much work to do that he's not consistently in that next group challenging right behind Palou and Kirkwood.
Yeah, it was a very quiet Detroit for Pato, but he still ended up seventh because, again, he went off sequence and the late caution kind of went in his favor. He ended up P7. It's a Dixon kind of day where he's not really anywhere in terms of pace. He just magically ends up seventh. Good. More of that. Like, that's not a bad thing. That's a great thing. So, I'm driving like Scott Dixon. What a problem to have.
Brilliantly boring.
Brilliantly boring, indeed. Santino Ferrucci. We've dodged the elephant in the room here. Yes. His best ever.
Trey, you want anything at Krispy Kreme?
Glaze. Just pour it directly over my head.
Just a bot? Not even the donuts? Just the glaze?
The whole glaze. I want the whole bucket over the head. Pretend I'm Steve-O from Jackass.
All right, I'll make you an appointment with the dentist alongside it.
Beautiful. Santino Ferrucci had a career-high finish in second in this race.
Yeah.
The good news is he gets to keep it. The bad news is he was docked 26 points. Turns out his car was illegal. There's a slot in the front of the car where you're supposed to hold the ballast if you want to get your car over minimum weight. They put it in the wrong place.
You dumb assholes.
So they put it in the wrong place, and as a result of that, they were deducted 26 points for failing tech inspection and fined $25,000 by IndyCar for doing so. Technically, it's a 25-point penalty, but they also lost the bonus point. You get the lead in a lap. So it's 26 points. It's the equivalent of basically going from finishing second to 14th. But because IndyCar is the way it is, you get to keep the finishing spot. Hooray.
Unless it's the 500.
That level of consistency is crazy. And I know some people will point out, they only kept the result because AJ Foyt gets technical support from the people that own the series. I just think it's just like a case of just like incompetence. But you know what's crazy about this is that despite the ballast weight missing there, the car is actually 10 pounds over the minimum weight. As Chris already points out, Santino could have been lighter in the post-practice weigh-in, and someone might not have adjusted the ballast weight in response to that.
It just makes it doubly stupid. Like, you know where the ballast is supposed to go on your car. They tell you where to put it, and you fail to do that properly. How dumb can you be? And let alone, as well, you were 10 pounds over. Why?
I guess you gotta always give it, a little bit of tolerance, because you never want to be on the bleeding edge, I guess.
10 pounds is way, way, way above.
That's a pretty big margin. I agree. Like, they're not really gaining a competitive value because he said it's overweight. Like, the whole thing about Rossi is that, like, yes, his strength bottle was underweight. Whole car still met the minimum weight limit.
Yeah, it's illegal on a technicality, but you still fail tech because it was a regular, even if it doesn't give you a performance advantage. That's the point. It's happened in MotoGP many a time where you've had a spec part or a part fail tech. It's not made your bike any faster, but if it's not meeting the parameters of the rules, it's still illegal. Iagura happened to Takanakagami in Moto 2 years ago. Happened to Yamaha when they got points deducted for having parts of their engine not be spec, even if it wasn't making them any quicker. You're still not allowed to have.
Yeah, we just had this whole thing at the Indy 500 about we had people go in and determine with multiple industry experts that those smooth Penske attenuators didn't really help the performance. But they still did possibly long-term damage to the organization.
Just because it didn't make a car any faster doesn't make it any less stupid.
Yeah.
And that's the third IndyCar cheating scandal we've had in as many weeks. It's funny now that one Mayer Shank this week announced they've hired a new quality control officer because they do not want to fall foul of these rules again. And two, all of a sudden, we're now getting like tighter tech inspections happening.
Including the founding of a completely separate sanctioning body that doesn't employ anyone from Penske because, well, they kind of had to after the fiasco with the 500.
Yeah, I'll give Duck Bowles, president of IndyCar, this. It seems like he's saying all the right things and wants to do right by the series that he's in charge of. So I appreciate that. But, man, it's just silly how much it looks like their technical team has gotten their pants pulled down around their ankles, their shoelaces tied together, and just they've lit a big bag of
socks are wet.
The socks are wet. There's a big bag of shit under the shoes.
Yeah, they pulled his pants down, and I would say that Santino Ferrucci didn't even have the common courtesy to give him a reach around, but we all know he hates that kind of activity. If last year was anything to go by.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And on top of that, I do have to say, we joke about Glaze here, but fucking horrific commentary from Townsend Bell. I
was
going to say,
he was getting one of those from Townsend Bell on commentary for the last 20 minutes of the race.
My man was commentating with his jeans wrapped around his ankles because he got more hype for finishing second than Carl Kirkwood did for winning. That's like he dumped an industrial vat of Krispy Kreme donut glaze over his head in celebration. Like, it was appalling.
Like a cinnamon bun when he was done with them.
Just like
it couldn't be any more obvious.
It's the
worst. Where Townsend Bell's bread is buttered.
It's the worst kept secret in IndyCar that he's Santino Ferrucci's agent. And
Jones told me that.
Yeah. And I love that people out there don't know it. And they still just don't know any better about this. It's hilarious how many people will just either completely intentionally turn the blind eye to it, don't care, or just don't know any better. Maybe they don't know that certain IndyCar subreddits or have had the conversations about it. But for those who don't know, yeah, Townsend Bell manages Santino Ferrucci, and yet he's allowed to commentate on the series. It shouldn't happen. It's a huge conflict of interest, and yet everybody's just kind of okay with it.
It's taking a page out of the motorcycle racing log there.
Remember when Townsend Bell was the guy keeping Paul Tracy in line?
God, I wish we were back in those days.
And you know what's frustrating is, like, we can never have a normal conversation about Santino Ferrucci. I'll try. And I've got no reason to cape for the guy. Y'all know why. Would you agree that this has been coming for a while?
Yes. I mean, ignoring the fact that his car was illegal.
Yeah. Fact that the car was illegal, he had a good season last year.
No, this has been coming. In all fairness and in sincerity to Santino, you can't take away that he was genuinely great last season. Like, he was top, he was ninth in the standings last year in a fight that was relatively unproven at that level with Michael Cannon at the helm, and he had almost a dozen top 10 finishes. That's not a fluke. He was genuinely outstanding last year. Like, if that was anybody else we liked more, the glaze would have been justified. Like, look, I am not going to pretend like I like this man. He is starting to discover his talent. Like, and this Foyt team in general is not as good as it was last year.
Yeah, they don't have Michael Cannon. They don't have that security blanket. That security blanket is now back at Dale Coyne, working with Rinus VK.
And if it wasn't for the DQ, Ferrucci would be on 144 points and he'd be 10th in the standings again, despite, I think, the Foyt team being worse than they were last year. He's a good driver now. There's no getting around it. Yeah. He's just good. There's no... Yeah. And honestly, given that he didn't have anywhere near the junior career to facilitate any kind of hype, it's hard to argue he's not massively improved.
Yeah. Whether or not you agree that he's improved as a person, I'll leave that up for you to decide. For disclosure, I didn't talk with him just because, like, I'm so locked into my indie job that it's just like, I barely have time to talk to IndyCar people. I wasn't going to go out of my way to talk with Santino Ferrucci. I can't speak from firsthand experience. It would be hard for me to forgive, like, the reason why he exited Formula 2 in a blaze of shit. If I ever could, if any of us ever could, but... He was good. There was always a glimmer of talent. Like, he was good enough to be a Formula One team's reserve driver.
Yeah.
Or young driver. Like, this should have been there.
Yeah, definitely. No doubt about it. And the other stuff, you be the judge. I just find it, shall we say, in poor taste that Townsend Bell basically gets to use his TV job as free advertising. I've never been comfortable with that relationship with the series. And yeah, like, it's never sat right with me. And James Hinchcliffe deserves better. Is all I will say.
Foster had a suspension failure at 185 miles an hour going down Jefferson Avenue. Is that good?
No, not great. Yep. Fastest point on the track. The entire right front corner implodes upon itself, pitches him into the right side wall, and then he has no way to stop. His front crash structure is actually off the car, and he plows Felix Rosenqvist at full speed.
He plows Rosenqvist so hard that the top of his knee smacks his steering wheel, and we're thinking, oh, geez, did he break something? Because it takes a while for him to get out of the car. He said, oh, fuck my knee. And then he's just sitting on his car for a minute. They actually had to get the stretcher out for him. Like, he's sitting up and everything, but he's not walking or anything. He limps onto that stretcher.
He's a very lucky boy.
He took a big whack.
That was a front suspension failure at 185 miles an hour.
They're both fortunate.
Yeah.
They are both extremely lucky people.
Yeah, because of where it happened. I mean, it hit a wall that normally you wouldn't be in danger of hitting, but he hit it immediately and then skated for the last quarter of that straight, basically on the belly of the car.
I thought for a second that Foster hurt his knee.
Yeah, Foster took like three big impacts through the front of that car.
Indeed. And Felix is so Americanized at this point, it was hard to tell the accents apart, even though Libby's from Cambridge.
God.
Like shit's
that's
wild.
Concerning. Yeah. Thankfully, both of them, relatively speaking, all right. Yeah. DeLara has actually issued a technical bulletin to everyone in IndyCar to check over those suspension mounting brackets, because basically the second he put the brakes on, the whole right front corner of the car collapsed. Toro Rosso style from back in the day. So
that's the sort of shit that would make me never want to get in a car again when a front suspension. That's the sort of shit that wouldn't look out of place in a Final Destination movie. No, I'm not getting in a car again after that. F that. No. The whole thing exploded. F that.
I mean, Spark is making Mercedes CLR diecast, and like the first person to buy one was Peter Dumbrick.
Oh, for God's sake.
Look,
so sometimes these people are just built different.
Not a good weekend for RLL. Graham Rahal finishes 20th. Devil Francesco retires after losing a wheel.
This was such this could have been so much more for RLL this weekend, in the sense of Graham Rahal led laps on the alternate strategy, could have sunk back into sequence if he was able to play his race out properly. Foster was running top 10 when his suspension collapses, and Devlin lost the wheel through no fault of his own. RNL was quick here this weekend. They had genuine pace. Graham Rahal made the fast six on merit. Louis Foster was just outside the top 10. This is a team that's actually genuinely looking like it's showing some improvement. And
the problem is that they turned out to be a triple threat. Bad, awful, and terrible. In three different ways.
Oh, we get to go to Gateway, where the rubber's really going to meet the road in Jay Fry's early part of his presidency and team.
The real test.
Yeah.
RLL short oval. Can they qualify the Indy Next Cars?
Oh, Lord. We will have to wait and see.
Are we going to be able to find out that weekend? Does Indy Next race?
Are they there?
I think they are.
Just send one there. Just give one to RLL and see if they can make it faster than their Indy car.
I don't blame Indy Next for having like the messiest race, because they're all youngins, okay?
Yeah, and they weren't even really all that messy.
So they are gonna race at Gateway, okay? Yeah. So we're gonna figure it out.
Yeah, they're racing at Gateway, and does it even matter when Dennis Hauger is beating the brakes off this field?
Hashtag they are gonna be insufferable.
Yeah. Dennis Hauger has won 4 of 5 to start the... We're not talking about Indy Next so much this season, so we'll give it a quick moment here. Dennis Hauger, the former Formula 3 champion, the F2 race winner, has won 4 out of 5 to start the year, and Lockie Hughes is the only person in the same postcode as him. Really?
This is a Porsche Carrera Cup guy.
I don't care.
You should have him under lock and key.
I don't care.
You should have him under lock and key, next man up.
Yeah,
sure.
And Hauger openly admitted he's in Indy Next because he needed the funding, and he needed the scholarship money. It's about $1.2 million if he wins the championship, depending on how many races he wins. Well, 4 out of 5 is a pretty good start. The only reason he's only got a 38-point lead is because Lockie Hughes has genuinely been outstanding as well. He's finished every race in the top 5, including the one race that Dennis didn't win, and that was in the road course round 1. And Kai Collette's been very solid as well. He's just had the one bad day where his car didn't work in Barber. There's a clear top 5 here. Unfortunately, I think only one is going to end up in IndyCar next year. And if the money is right, then Hauger will end up being in the series next year.
Because he dominates and disagree. He needs to be up here.
He should be, because he's been brilliant this year. Lockie Hughes needs to be up there as well. Hughes doesn't need another year. He's ready to go right now. He's excellent. Collette, we kind of knew he was going to be good. Miles Rowe is finally putting together a good season, but I fear it might be too late for him, given he's, 25 next month. He's probably just a bit too old at this point for it. And, this is year three for him now in Indy Next. It's his second year, but you can't be 100 points behind Dennis Hauger and look good. That's the problem. He's gone 4-4-3-3, but he was poor in 3. He was 18th.
Because he was one of the many that were swept up in the mess in the first lap. Juan Manuel Correa could be a huge disruptor in this, because we forget he's here now.
He's here now, and he was third in Detroit. Like, only his third Indy Next race. The talent was never the problem with Juan Manuel Correa.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to go into any more details as to why. Although, I must admit, Niels Kuhlen has 2 top 10 finishes. How good is this field, really?
God damn. Oof.
Like, I'm just saying.
He's ahead of Bryce Excuse me. Porsche hypercar driver Bryce Aaron in the standings, and they're on the same team.
Yep.
That's I know a thing. It's JDC Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah, they someone take that car from them.
Yeah, good luck there, buddy.
I had a good time at Detroit.
Good race. Enjoyed it. Yeah. IndyCar is off this week. Annoyingly, they chose to run Gateway in a direct competition with the Canadian Grand Prix and the 24 Hours of Le Mans because this good series is stupid. There was no reason why it couldn't have raced this weekend instead.
They're going to race Sunday night, but it's not like Alex Palou can catch a Concorde flight and be on the grid at Gateway after doing Le Mans.
It's stupid. There's no reason why they couldn't race this weekend instead. None.
Imagine scheduling yourself against a leg of the Triple Crown and the series that everyone watches instead.
The collective stupidity from three different series to let this happen is just completely inexcusable.
What did Le Mans do? Le Mans's been here for fucking 100 years.
And at least we know where
the other than that one time they ran it in September.
Yeah. And we all know why that happened. And there was also the time where Formula One was just like, oh, we're jealous of the attention Nico Hülkenberg's winning with them. We better put the European Grand Prix right on their weekend. Do it now.
Exactly. It's,
yeah,
it's
so everyone had to get out of their F1 cars and find out what happened at the end of that race.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't like it, but here we are. Like I said, IndyCar race is
Sunday night, but
it's a night race, and I mean, it's not great for us Brits. Fucking 1:30 in the morning start.
1:30.
You are gonna need to fire up that Dan Campbell caffeine diet to get any hope of watching all those races.
I am a filthy European. I veto the right to complain about racing start times. This is just a bit of a shitter. It's one of those
days. Go down to the GM Ren Center Cafe to the Panera Bread and ask if they still got some of that charged lemonade in the back that they can't sell.
Yes, please. like regular show, give me the double glazed fritters.
Never forget to train your heart to failure. Never skip heart day.
Indeed. IndyCar will be back in a week and a half's time at Gateway for the Fondmerito 500. We'll be back then. Next week, we'll have, amazingly, just the one show next week. It'll be Al Bikes from the Grand Prix of Aragon this weekend. Weird time talking about an Aragon Grand Prix in June rather than September, but here we are. MotoGP's wonky-ass calendar at it again. Will Marc Marquez go back-to-back in Aragon? Probably.
We'll God, if it was anything see. Like last year, we're all in trouble.
Yeah, we'll see. Al Bikes returns to Motorsport 101 next week. Until then, I've been Jay Harrison. They've been Cameron Buckley and RJ O'Connor. Thank you very much for watching, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
So, does Alex Palou finish this year with more wins than the Rockies have right now?